Hi everyone, this is Penny Fool
and Bird Brat,
and today we're here to talk about history of the queer, straight, and gay scenes in BDSM.
Yes.
And this is one that I've been wanting to talk about for a long time, because today we live in this world where there is basically like what I would call a straight queer scene in the BDSM kink world that's like got some queer people of various types in it, and then some straight people, and then some people who are a little bit in between those two things. Mm-hmm. And then separate from that, there's a gay men scene, and there's some overlap between these two scenes, but they're pretty separate. And then, you know, some would say there's also actually a third scene, which is the just queer scene, but that's kind of like a little bit mixed with the straight queer scene. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways. And this is kind of a strict, like, kind of dichotomy or whatever, but it's something that I think is, like, roughly right, although not completely right, you know. Mm-hmm. some but what about this, you know, kind of things. And so I wanted to learn the history and talk about how we got here.
Yeah.
That's how I think about it. Anything you want to add about my characterization of the current present day?
Yeah, I would add, since this was a clarifying thing that we had to figure out when we first started conversing about this, in part because this is kind of explicitly about communities and scenes, you know.
Yes.
And less so about kind of the history of, like, private practices of kink, or,
yes,
like, you know, kink and this, I think, speaks to a little bit of our different directions, where you sort of became educated about BDSM very much through a community, right? Sort of, or like through real people.
Yeah,
and
true,
I became educated about like BDSM mostly through like fiction.
Right.
And there's like a separate history for that I think looks quite different, actually. So it'll be interesting in a future episode to go into that. But this one's really sort of about like actual scenes.
Real world community.
Yes.
Versus like the media communities.
Yes,
or whatever.
Yes,
else.
Yes,
yes. Yes.
Exactly.
Okay, great. We should also do a media communities episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I know a lot less about that, so I would like to learn more about that. And I also don't know much about this either. This is really just based off of our experiences, and you know, we don't know everything, so.
But you've done a fair amount of, like, reading.
Yes.
And attempt to, like, not even just reading, but, like, assembling a lot of, like, different histories that are, like, and history texts that are, like, not super widely available. So
yes.
I do think that you have, like, quite a bit of knowledge on this.
Yes. For someone who's, like, my age and experience and interested in history, like, I think I have, like, the average amount of,
mm-hmm,
of knowledge you expect. And there are probably people who know more about this than I do, who, like, actually were there, or, like, actually have written histories about this stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, they're listening to this, might dispute some of these opinions.
Yeah.
But let's dive into it. We don't, that's enough,
chit chat
and disclaimers. So we're going to start with history, because, history is kind of like how we learn, like where we became today, which is really the key question.
Yes.
How do we end up here? And so to me, the good places to start are like looking at the formation of the gay scene, and then looking at the formation,
mm-hmm,
of the straight queer scene.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered the formation of the gay scene a little bit, on this pod before. So I'm going to like, you know, breeze over that a little bit. Basically, you know, coming out of World War II, there was, you know, groups of bikers and soldiers and stuff like that, you know, vets from the war, who were gay, who got together and started doing some BDSM practices, like, in the 50s. And those groups coalesced and formed some physical spaces or whatever, and pretty much that was, like, exclusively gay men for, you know, maybe, like, 20 years in those spaces, with some exceptions. And then in the 70s is when we start to see the straight queer scene emerge. So that's kind of, like, really where our story begins, and we haven't talked as much about this. So there are a couple of seminal organizations there that we'll talk about. So one is the Jugendspiel Society.
You say that one more time?
Jugendspiel, I think is how you say it.
Okay.
They were formed in 1971 in New York. So that's like the...
Okay,
like,
dates.
Yes, yes. So that's... We would say that that's the, like, first, quote-unquote, you know, straight queer scene, or like, community that got started,
mm-hmm,
in the U.S. anyway. That's what I really know about. And Jugendspiel... was formed, I think, by two submissives. It was initially started as, like, a masochistic society between these two, like, subs.
Ooh, interesting.
One of whom, I think, was a queer woman, and one was a bisexual man.
Okay.
And then they quickly decided, you know, or not that quickly, but slowly expanded and added more members, and then decided to accept other people who weren't just masochists.
Mm-hmm.
So the two founders met when the founder, who I think again is a bisexual male, put an ad out in like a New York paper and was like, masochism? Is there something wrong with it?
Oh my God.
Like, what do you think about it? Whatever else. Just like
yeah.
some weird
yeah, yeah.
cryptic ad. And then just like, maybe just one person responded and was
and
like,
what city did this happen
New York.
In? Okay, cool.
Yep. One person responded and was like, huh, okay, what is this ad about, right? And
yeah.
they started talking, and then
yeah.
from there, there's the society that actually still exists today, still is in New York running events and stuff. So you can still go to Eugensville Society events, and they just go by TES now a lot because it's a lot easier to say than the Eugensville Society.
What does TES stand for?
It's like the Eugensville
oh.
Society.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So if you see like TES events in New York, that's like who's running that.
Mm.
And they have, like, a website and stuff like that. So I haven't been to any of their stuff. I don't know how active they are anymore. But they got started mostly as kind of, like, a place to relate and discuss
mm-hmm.
and chat, you know, get educated versus as an educational society, right? Mostly a community society. Versus, like, what you see a lot with the gay men that we've been looking at,
mm-hmm.
their groups tended to largely form around play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So largely for them it was, like, we are going to hang out. And we are going to play,
mm-hmm.
right? And
mm-hmm.
we're less worried about, you know, the education stuff is definitely a big part of that, but, like, we're less just, like, primarily focused on the education, right? That kind of comes with
mm-hmm.
the, like, actual stuff that we're doing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that the people in Eugensville weren't fucking.
Right.
But it wasn't, like, the society's purpose
right.
to do that. Like, it wasn't, like, they were initially, like, organizing play parties. They were there to, like, do education, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first one. And they're soon followed by another one, which you have read more about, which is the Society of Janus.
Yes.
Also still exists today.
Mm-hmm.
Society of Janus, based...
Slightly more high profile than... Like,
yes.
I'd heard of the Society of Janus
yes.
before.
Yes,
as opposed to not having heard of the Eugensville Society.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Do you remember anything off the top of your head about them, like, kind of summary stuff? I can also share.
Also, 1970s?
Correct.
Late 70s. Started by Cynthia Slater and one of her partners.
Yes.
Kind of branching off of, like, Cynthia Slater, who very much was sort of in the gay scene and then sort of built this out of that. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Let me say a little more about
yes,
this, too.
Yes, please do.
So I'll just add, everything you said is right. So to add to this, Cynthia was a dominatrix.
Mm-hmm.
And her partner, I think it was her husband, actually, this time, were...
Larry,
good memory, yes, was her submissive. And they actually started what became Janus, wasn't called Janus at the time, just looking for a community for kind of like other people in the like femdom, male sub scene. So like that was like kind of the initial thing that they were looking for. And that also had a very similar mechanism to start. People put out, they put out like newspaper ads in like Berkeley
mm-hmm.
papers, I think, initially.
Yes, yes, yes.
Saying, like, hey, who wants to join up and talk with us?
Mm-hmm.
So they think that they got a couple of other femdom, male sub, like, couples to talk with them and didn't get much momentum, like, kind of trying to run it as a little group. And then Cynthia actually got more momentum when she basically stepped on the gas herself and was like, fuck it, I'm running my own thing.
Yeah, gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah, which happened in short order, I think within, like, maybe, like, 6 months or a year.
Mm-hmm.
She switched it up and was like,
mm-hmm.
fuck this.
Boss.
Yes.
Boss moves. Leo.
Yes, yes, Leo. Leo. Great. Nice. Good call. Okay, sorry. So I cut you off. You're talking about Cynthia. You were just talking about gay men. Anything else you want to say about her?
I don't think too much, but, like, Society of Janus also, I think I remember reading that, like, its membership was also, like, pretty skewed heavily male, right, for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah. So you want to talk a little bit more about, like, what came after that? I remember some of that, too. That's helpful. No worries, I got you. So I'll give you a couple prompts and just chime in if there's stuff that's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So Society of Janus, basically, Cynthia is getting it started, and there are a lot of male submissives
mm-hmm.
who are interested.
Yes.
So they get a space and are meeting there, you know, somewhat regularly, a couple different spaces they're
mm-hmm.
working through. So predominantly it's male subs, Cynthia as like pretty
mm-hmm.
much the only woman there, and then Cynthia trying to get more women to come
mm-hmm.
And being frustrated because women, there's no decorum and etiquette at this time, so like
right.
any women who come in like this milsubs will throw themselves immediately at their feet and be like, mistress.
Yes. The classic, like, please don't refer to me with an honorific unless you actually know me, but this was not a rule back then.
Yeah, exactly. This is where that rule had to come from. Yes, yes. So these largely straight men did not have any decorum and just did that.
Classic.
And the real...
History repeats itself.
History repeats itself, yeah. So that might sound familiar to people who are in the scene today. Yeah, The real catalyst here is gay men getting involved. Mm-hmm. Is like really what starts Janice picking up. So like a lot of these male submissives are kind of anonymous about what they do. They don't actually help Cynthia at all do anything.
Also so very classic.
Yes. So she feels frustrated. But fortunately, she is actually living in San Francisco in a place that her landlord is Jim Kane, who is a well-known gay leather daddy. Jim Kane, let's do a brief Jim Kane interlude. Jim was a priest in Colorado, founded the gay men's leather club of motorcyclers, I think called like the Rocky Mountaineers, while he was still a priest. Interesting. And then...
Love it. More priests should do this.
More priests should do this, yes. If Fleabag, the show, is any...
Oh my god. Wait, could you imagine if the hot priest in Fleabag... Like, if we got, like, season 3 of Fleabag and it was just, like, hot priest is actually, you know, a gay leather daddy?
Yeah. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah, that would be awesome. Okay, so yeah, hot priest
Yeah, becomes Fleabag's landlord. Anyways.
So, basically. So Jim was hanging out, had this... place in the Rockies or whatever he was hanging out, and he was, you know, part of this motorcycle club. Eventually does leave the clergy at the end of this, so he's doing all this in the 60s, leaves Colorado, moves to San Francisco in the 70s, gets a place in San Francisco that is like his house, but also he uses as like a informal dungeon in his extra rooms, play space, and he is Cynthia's landlord at this time. So Cynthia and her husband Larry, I think it's her husband. And so he starts coming to her stuff.
Yes.
And then, as you mentioned, Cynthia also loves gay men. Mm-hmm. So Cynthia is like very, very much like excited to interact with him. And then the other gay men who are in the area, right? Cynthia is living south of Market, which in the 70s is a hotbed for gay leather men, right?
Oh, yes. SF. RIP SF.
Yes.
Of that era.
RIP. Yeah.
Do I remember correctly that you said that Jim Kane, or Cynthia Slater, when she started renting from Jim Kane, like, this was just kind of purely random and not actually...
As far as I know. Okay, yeah, cool. As far as I know, it was random. I mean, I wasn't there, so I have no idea.
Yeah, right.
I haven't read anything either to confirm or deny that.
Too bad more landlords aren't, like, leather daddies. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe we don't want this.
Yeah, good call out. I would be... generally pro it, but I'm open to it. I actually had a boss once who was a like leather bear.
I do remember you saying that.
Yes. That was really great, because I could just be like, you know, once we got a little closer, he'd be like, yeah, I'm in a little polycule right now, I'm going up to the farm and we're gonna play all weekend. I'd be like, that's great. Good for you.
Good for you.
So living the dream, but zooming back into Janice. So Society of Janice, like, really coalesces around this time because gay men get involved. And the gay men who get involved is Jim Kane and then also, like, a number of his friends. So, like, another famous name there is Guy Baldwin, who's, like, a famous other author. Mm-hmm. A few other people coming through. These are people who are interested in the mission of Janice. So Janice, like the Jugendspiel Society, starts as an educational organization, right? So you kind of build community and less about play, right? So this is something that gay men don't have at this time, right? It's, like, a society purely based around education.
Right.
Gay men are more... doing some education, but it's like much more informal. Yeah. So it's like, so I think,
and famously, you know, the scene was pretty dangerous for a lot of people.
It was very dangerous.
The kind of consent practices, you know, level of like familiarity with, you know, everyone's down to throw a punch, but like who knows where you can, you know, do it safely, right?
Yes. Great call. So it's very, it's few and far between to have any like formal training at this time. So, basically, you know, Kane especially is very interested in education, and then also Baldwin and other people. So those are the gay men who join. It's kind of like a small group, and the male submissives apparently don't really give him a hard time. They're just like, cool, I'm glad you're here. Mm-hmm. Then these gay guys start educating Janice. So Janice, like, basically at this point is like a bunch of straight people or some bisexual people who are like, have been doing, you know, in their closets, quote unquote,
right,
doing BDSM. And all of a sudden they're like, wait, you guys have been doing BDSM for 20 years and you can teach us how to do stuff like in a better way, right? So it's like, you know, some of these games are learning too, but it's like a much more experienced stuff.
Yes.
So there's a really great recruitment practice for women that happens is actually that Cynthia will be like, hey, come in and we're going to do an educational demo, right? Mm-hmm. Because she knows some, you know, is recruiting around trying to find some women who are just in BDSM, but people are not very experienced. So you can say, hey, we're going to single tail someone.
Mm-hmm.
People get very excited. They're like, oh, cool. I've never seen, heard of anyone doing anything like that. That's
yeah.
so edgy,
yeah, yeah.
you know? So even though, despite all the annoying male subs who are there, everyone gets to hang out and like watch. No shade to male subs, but just mm-hmm. in this particular case.
This also makes so much sense. I don't know, like the kind of culture of people, like, yeah, like straight and queer people love to take a class. You know, like
very true, very true.
They
and
love
actually,
to
yeah.
like take a class in like a, you know, like I think that, of course, like purely speaking about connotations, there was like a lot of fear about the quote unquote like dirtiness of like
uh-huh.
you know the gay scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dirty meaning like the fear around like disease and
mm-hmm.
also just around like just practices in general.
Mm-hmm.
The association of it with dirtiness, and then like to do it in just like a very like educational setting where it's like, oh, come witness us teach like a very
right.
kind of literal skill. Like even in kind of my conversations with vanilla friends today, you
yeah.
know, they're much more likely to be like, oh, cool, like we can take a rope class
yeah.
or we can take
yeah.
like a, you know, single tail whip class.
Yeah.
And like the idea of like going to like a sex party feels like a lot more like
yes.
scary, sticky, icky.
Yes. Yes. No, very, very true and very interesting. Why do you think that is?
I think, well, part of it is that there's, like, especially at the time for, like, gay men to actually come out and, like, be in a scene, there already has to be so much of, like, a willingness to transgress societal rules.
Yes.
And then, like, I don't know, the framing of, like, a classroom is, like, by kind of necessity a little bit more... safe feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know, where there you also get people who are like kind of interested in kink theoretically or interested
mm-hmm.
in kind of being or feeling transgressive, but who aren't actually willing to like push boundaries,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
That like will end up sort of doing that.
Yes.
Yes. And yeah, and I think that like, yeah, that one of probably the bigger, again, like connotations of the kind of gay male BDSM scene is just this kind of like unruliness, like lack of safety or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so this
mm-hmm.
feels like a really kind of approachable, like controlled space,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's what a classroom is essentially, is like a controlled space.
Right, right. I think that's true. I think that's a smart reflection on even
mm-hmm.
how we are to the present day
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have another thought about that, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this also goes to, like, yeah, it's just making me reflect on, like, the kind of massive, but, that yeah, that this kind of dichotomy still exists somewhat where, like, not only do we have, like, in-person classes, but there are so many, like, kink webinars now, and those are usually just, like, queer straight, you know,
mm-hmm.
again, run by, like, the queer straight orgs
right.
or, like, the Instagram infographics and stuff are very that, too.
Right.
And, yeah, like, the gay male scene is not, like, underground in the way that it used to be, but, like, it's not sort of as publicly visible as some of the other stuff.
It's very true, and until you're, like, all of a sudden at a hotel and you're like, whoa, it's circuit weekend, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, so the funny, that's very true, and it's, like, actually funny because if you pay attention to, like, you know, how to get into the gay men scene, it's actually, like, gay men solve a lot of problems that straight and queer people create for themselves.
Mm.
For instance, a common complaint that straight and queer people have is like, how do I find someone to meet up and play with?
Right.
The gay men are like, well, we're
they've
just,
been so good at making
just,
the best apps.
Right. Before apps, like, you know, like gay men were really good at cruising, right?
Yeah.
That was a problem straight and queer people had.
Yes.
And then now that apps happened, like, not only is there Grindr, which is okay, but there's also Recon,
mm-hmm.
which is, like, you know,
which
for
I
those...
didn't know about at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So for those who are unfamiliar, like, Recon is a, you know, gay men's app that is, like, a little bit like FetLife, if you're familiar with FetLife, which is, like, I think had gotten more news coverage than Recon has, you know, not necessarily always for positive reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is that, you know, FetLife, I feel like, is much more events and community focus, education focus, and then Recon is much more like a dating app. where you can pick, like, this is what I'm looking for, you know, here's my profile, whatever else.
Yeah.
And then also, but it's like a dating app plus like Facebook events, mm-hmm. right? So it's like you can also see when the big events are happening and like go to those.
Yeah, yeah. This does make me kind of interested in like the history of that life and like how it sort of developed, because I do think that in the beginning people, or like there are still a lot of people who want to use it as like a dating app, you
totally,
know,
yeah.
but like there's just no good way to do it because people suck.
Yeah, because people suck. Yeah, exactly. And it's I think it's a different different culture in the gay men's space or whatever, where it's like that is like acceptable and okay and not something that's going to be too freaky. And honestly, I think something that could be managed in the straight career space.
Yeah,
like someone could build an application that does this in some way. But I think that, yeah, it's just like, you know, gay men, you know, want to do kink, solve the problem, right? Straight queer people, sometimes we wave our hands in the air and we're like, how do we solve the problem?
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And there's more to the picture than that, but I think that's kind of like a little has some you know nugget of truth to it, while also being a little more complicated than I'm putting it. So props to people who've been at Recon. It's awesome. I've been on there a tiny bit, and I'm like, this is great. I really don't do the gay scene anymore, but if I did, I would be like on there all the fucking time, and maybe I'll have a moment in getting back on there.
I mean, once, I know we still have a little bit more history stuff to cover, but I would love to hear more about your experiences in the gay scene, because again, completely opaque to me, right?
Yes.
Like, I really have only heard it through friends who have been in it, you know?
Yes, I can talk about that. So let's talk a little more about the history, zooming back in. So I think another thing that is relevant, you know, good transition point, is also just the attitude where the segregation, even back then, between gay people and who are out as gay and
right.
not gay people, especially out as gay kinky, because especially I read Guy Baldwin's account of his first time to Janice. He was like, this is so funny because we are literally, you know, walking on off the street. Like, this is just, if they're meeting a place we were at all the time, and we literally, like, every day of the week are doing leather sex, you know, because that's what the 70s was like. And these straight people and some bi people are quaking in their boots because they're like, how could I possibly go to a meeting like this, right? Or I'm going to be talking about kink. This is my secret desire, right? It's very different from today where, like, no one talks about this.
Quaking in their crusty boots that haven't been properly boot blacked.
Quite possibly, yeah. Or they might not even have boots, right? They might not know that that's the gear,
quaking
right?
Quaking in their tennis shoes.
Tennis shoes is probably more accurate, yeah. And I think to him it was, like, kind of comical, right, to have this, like, yeah, you could just be out, man. Like, we've been out for 20 years, like, you know? But I think it's a different kind of attitude, perspective. But I think that's also good for and helps people feel more comfortable in the space. Yeah.
I mean, and there is something to be said. I you know, zooming out even a little bit, as I sometimes do. But, like, yeah, this is making me think a lot about the, like, learning through experience versus learning through a classroom thing, where, like, the people in the classroom often don't actually know how to put stuff into action.
Yep.
But the people who've learned by experience have also been, like, burned a lot, you know, and, like, hurt a lot.
Yeah.
So, just, like, very different pathways.
That
seems to map onto, like, a lot more than just the kink scene.
Oh, totally. And I think that's nice thought. I like that. high five. But yeah, no, so I think that let's keep the history moving forward.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. I got sidetracked. So basically, they're doing this education, able to bring some women in. So that's, you know, wow, cool, women are coming besides Cynthia. However, it's really hard to retain women and keep them interested. So even though there are, like, you know, some who are coming and are, like, being like, wow, I want to bottom for some of these awesome demos these gay men are doing, right? It's still kind of difficult. So actually, this is what causes a split off, where Janice actually forms a separate organization that becomes Samwa, which you may have heard of, listeners. And Samwa is like a lesbian organization. And that organization is what initially attracts Patrick Califia, who's a very famous, like, leather guy, and Gail Rubin, who's, like, probably the most famous leather historian and anthropologist. Still don't know whether or not Gail's still in the faculty at Michigan. I haven't figured that out.
I don't think so, but
okay.
Yeah.
And Gail's still around. And you know, Cynthia's part of the group too, and other people join. Dolly, whatever her name is, who wrote The Ethical Slut, is part of Samwa.
Oh, I didn't realize that, actually.
Yeah. So a bunch of people who are very influential in the, like, BDSM and polyamory worlds, like, come out of this organization. And then Samwa is kind of run in this, like, limbo a little bit between, oh, we're, you know, working on Janus and we're running Samwa, and they're a little bit divergent or whatever, but, like, they're kind of together. Apparently the whole way it's just a huge slog, especially for the women who are involved. Apparently it's just this, like, painful, painful work, because it's, like, we're doing this risky thing that is in the middle of what's known as the lesbian sex wars, which is, like, you know, the second wave feminism movement is splitting between lesbians who are anti-porn and, like, anti, like, loud sex, and lesbians who are pro-porn and pro, like, open public sex, right? And it's very much...
classroom lesbians and practice lesbians.
Right. And there's, like, literally, it's a very small community, right, of people who are doing this, because it's, like, mostly, like, academics who are, like, having this split. So, for instance, like...
are we in the 80s now, or still late 70s?
We're in the early 80s. Yeah. So like, for instance, I think it was Gail mentioned that Gail Rubin was teaching a class as, like, a grad student at Berkeley, where, like, one of her students went on to become, like, another famous, like, leather dyke, whose name I don't know. And then the other student in class went on to become, like, one of the leaders of the, like, anti-porn feminist movement.
Classic.
Right? And so it's, like, teaching this, like, I think it was, like, a women's history class or something, women's anthropology. And then having these radically different views that, like, become very influential in the class. It's, like, very much it. So it's, like, exhausting. They, you know, everyone you listen to talk about that sounds so traumatized from just dealing with all that, like, conflict within the movement, because they were so united and then totally split on this idea of, like, sexuality.
Right. Well, can I... slight tangent. Even today, you know, one of my friends was teaching a Gail Rubin essay in just, like, an intro gender and sexuality class.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, people were, like, super psyched on it, and then there's, like, a mention of, you know, a sort of, like, age gap relationship, right? And everyone was like, oh no, like, this is super bad, right? Like, a bunch of, like, college, like, freshmen and seniors. And yeah, you know, it's kind of very interesting to see how there is even this, like, convergence, like, even through, like, a scholar like Gail Rubin, that there's still this sort of, like, weird kind of double tension where it's like, oh, we want to praise this person for their kind of, like, radical sexual politics, and also we're still, like, gross out and, like, scared of, you know, the actual practice aspect.
Yes.
Like, we only want it in theory.
Yes. Perfect. So, no, okay, so that makes a lot of sense. And then also at the same time, it's traumatic for these women who are part of this, because they are trying to, like, keep Janus running, because none of the men are helping. They're dealing with not just male submissives who are still being annoying, because there's not like community norms yet about like what you should do or whatever, and some people just don't act well without rules. And they're also dealing with male doms who are joining, which is a whole other thing, like joining the group.
Oh boy.
Straight male doms.
Oh boy.
Who also don't have a sense of like...
oh, it's stressing me out already.
Yeah. And then they also are dealing with gay men who, you know, the few gay men who are joining Janus, like, this is a cool idea, are, like, great, but most gay men actually aren't very receptive to other people coming into the space, right? This is a time when it's different from now, like, gay men wouldn't be very receptive to you going into, like, other spaces. Still is kind of like that, but not very, but very, very much more so, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, for instance, you know, it's disappointing to me a little bit to read about, but I was like, this kind of makes sense. Like, you know, we think about, oh, like, all these leather bars out the market, but really, like most of the women who were there were, like, really, like, three women.
Yeah.
It was, like, Cynthia Slater, Califia, and Ruben rolling through, and then, you know, whoever they were playing with, they would bring along, right? But, like, wasn't a regular. But it wasn't, like, these were, you know, gay and lesbian spaces. These were gay spaces. You go ahead.
I have a thought. I have a crackpot theory. This is just a reflection.
What'd you got?
I do think that, you know, as I'm listening more and, like, reflecting more on it, I think that one of the big reasons for this divide is, or not even the divide, but just, like, even this classroom practice versus, like, practice, right, of the gay scene versus straight queer scene, is the fact that for a lot of the gay men's community, this is their community. You know, like, this is their entire life. This is their lifestyle. These are the people who are also taking care of them and, like, you know, every aspect of their life, and the fact that, you know, just their jobs are always at risk because of the fact that they are, like, legible as gay men.
Totally.
And I think that one of the things about the straight queer scene is it's a lot of people who can put on their, like, suits and ties and, like, go back into their days, right? This also speaks to the whole, like, problem with the male submissives, which is that this for them is just, like, sexual gratification and not, like, a community that they feel obligated or, like, really depend on to, like, pour their life into and therefore, like, get stuff back out of it. and also makes sense in the classroom context of, like, oh, you know, part of why the gay men scene is, like, so practice-based is, again, this is just the people you're with all the time,
right?
And there's going to be harm, and there's also going to be, like, accountability just because you are running into these people. There's no way to kind of escape that.
Right.
And then with the queer scene, it's kind of like, oh, ew, I had, like, an icky experience with a guy, therefore I'm just going to dip out of this and, like, go back to my private practice of,
yep.
like, having sex behind a closed door, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, I think it's something that still tracks a lot today, too, where it's just, like, you know, there's the people for whom, like, their leather identity is something that's really integrated. And this is something we've talked about a little bit, too,
mm-hmm.
where it's, like, who feels... It's not even just a matter, because, you know, sometimes how it's talked about now is, like, oh, like, who feels safe, like, the kind of white queers who are allowed to be, like, out and, like, weird and, like, have their tattoos out and be wearing, like, leather and be a little stinky or whatever and, like, can still like, walk through their normal lives or, like, not be pathologized
sure.
or, like, still hold on to their jobs,
sure.
right?
Sure.
But, you know, what is now a, quote-unquote, like, seen as a privilege of being, like, out about your sexuality in the past was really like something where it's like, oh, because it's so much riskier, like, to kind of opt into, again, the gay men's lifestyle is really to, like, build those communities that support you when all the institutions don't, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And there's, you know, we're gonna come back and have some nuance about that too.
Yes.
But I think that over, like, in broad strokes, I can really see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think too, it's like, speaks a little bit to the like, political nature of sexuality. And we actually
yes.
have even more stuff to confirm what you're saying when we think about what happens, like, to the women who choose to be out.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, the fact that we know Califia and Rumen and Slater's names
mm-hmm.
is such a testament to, like, how visible you are if you're out as a woman
mm-hmm.
at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And even today, but especially then.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they are... some of the few people who really choose to, like, make it their lifestyle, and it has huge impacts on
right.
their life,
right?
Right? Like, Slater dies
yep.
from AIDS.
Yep.
So, you know, spoiler, RIP. She was awesome. And then, you know, Califia, like, is fired from many jobs,
mm-hmm.
faces huge, like, controversy about within the movement and also over the writing stuff. Oh my God,
mm-hmm.
he deals a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ruben also, like, is, like, able to leverage, like, her academic job and, like, you know, maintain a job at least, like, for a while, right? Like I said, but faces so much criticism,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, even reading some of the stuff that she's talking about in the classroom is
yeah,
still
yeah.
so controversial, right? People, every time people read her stuff, it's very
mm-hmm.
controversial, right? So it's like,
or they do the classic thing where they just, like, really see it through the lens of, like, ooh, we're studying cool history, and it's like, this is so recent, you know? Like,
yeah.
this is really
she's
just
still alive.
Going.
Yeah. And speaking and stuff.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
she's
yes.
still around. So, Gail, sorry for misrepresenting you. Anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I love your work.
Yeah, I love
Thanks
your work
for
too.
Listening.
Yeah. she's probably listening, but I wish.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just a... It's really hard to, like, be out and do that thing. It does make a big difference in, like, your lifestyle.
Yeah.
yeah.
I do think that, like, my sense of, like, the really kind of, like, overt leatherdite community is that it is very, like, rooted in, again, this kind of gay leather man history, you
yep.
know, and, like, really trying to model itself off of that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting maybe nuance to some of the stuff we're talking about. But, like, the leatherdite kind of movement as something that, yes, is... queer, you know, ostensibly queer, but also, like, takes so much more inspiration from the gay men's community in a
yep.
way that, like, some of the other kind of queer straight institutions just try to pretend that they emerged out of nowhere.
I agree with you. And I think there's also a difference between, just like we talked about before, a difference between people who use the label who live very different lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, like, what I see is that there's always a small group of leather dykes who are hanging out at in gay men's spaces,
mm-hmm.
even to this day, right? And so, like, for instance, we were talking recently about this, like, newer organization, Women of Drummer,
yes,
that's, like, recruiting
yes, yes.
heavily in Philly right now, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're recently founded, but they have been on the circuit, basically. They go,
mm-hmm.
They've been going, before that, they were going to, like, gay men's events, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they probably have recon accounts
yeah.
and are following what the events are.
Yeah.
And just being like, we're just going there, right? And it's just a smaller group of women
mm-hmm.
in it, kind of a sea of men, but that's, like, kind of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Versus... leather dykes who are like, oh yeah, I'm into leather and I have a cool mullet and
yeah.
I basically don't really do stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it's like and aren't really kind of like part of that
mm-hmm.
that scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's like more people in the latter category versus like the former category,
yes.
if that makes sense.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to any of the like big like leather conferences? I mean, you've been to one
Which
of
ones?
The big
do you mean for like straight queer, gay? What are you thinking of?
I don't know. I should probably have clarified that question. There was the one that happened very recently in New Jersey. International Ms. Leather Boot Black, that one.
Yes.
Anyways.
I've never been to the like competition circuit.
Yeah.
So that's
I'm quite curious, about those histories too. But sorry, that was like a tangent that I wasn't ready to go down yet because I just don't know enough.
We should do an episode on that. And the competition scene, which, you know, some think of more as kind of like a pageant, like mm-hmm. kind of like mm-hmm. a you know, drag race kind of thing, and some think of it more as like a kind of serious mm-hmm. scene thing, often like runs in tandem with like circuit stuff, right? Yeah. So like, you know, Ms. Leather and Mr. Leather can come to things mm-hmm. or whatever, and it's mostly dominated by men, but there's also mm-hmm. some women there in that too. And that comes out of, if you haven't listened to the Chuck Renslow episode, Renslow starts the first one of those, which is International Mr. Leather.
Yes.
And then, you know, it's a whole bunch now of those kind of competitions. But yes, no, good tangent. And, it's like, ties back to this idea that there's like some leather dykes in gay men's spaces. Mm-hmm. For me, I've been to like, you know, one or two like gay men's like conference circuit mm-hmm. stuff, or just like in and out for like events mm-hmm. or whatever, and then been to also like one or two straight queer conferences. Mm-hmm. Very, very different feel.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. So this is just my limited, like I said, I have very limited experience with both of these scenes. Like, some people are regulars on the conference circuit. So my, you know, feel on them kind of maps to a little of this conversation, right? Mm-hmm. So like the you know, straight queer conferences that I've been to, I felt a little bit like a little bit more education and like cool stuff oriented.
That makes sense.
Which is like awesome, because you get to see people doing like really cool rope demos, like really cool like classes. I really enjoyed a class I went to by the people who now run the Coliseum. It's a new place in New York, on like heavy bondage, at the most recent conference I went to. Very cool. So that's kind of like my impression. Obviously, they have play, like they set aside time for play and like whatever else like that. People do play at those. To me, the play is like a little bit more, but like kind of like there's a lot of people like looking and staring, and like it's like limited play space, and people are kind of just like being a little like, you know, less focused sometimes on like their own things that they're doing, and more focused on like what's the other thing that's doing, kind of the spectacle of this like you know, classroom thing that's happening, right? So that's my vibe. Other people completely disagree, mm-hmm. right? Some people, you know, are also doing crazy shit there. But also, like, a lot of the stuff that happens too that's crazy is people go back to their hotel rooms or whatever, right? And do it there.
Right.
Not all the time. So that's my very limited experience impression. And then the gay men stuff that I've been to is a little bit more, like, less people looking at other people, except with an intention to, like, be like, oh, you want to fuck, right?
Right.
And I think also much less like leather oriented almost than you would expect, in the sense of like a lot of people are wearing leather, but also people just come to that because they're like, oh, I'm a gay guy in town and I heard there's a party that's going to be going on,
kind of get fucked rough, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think it's like my impression is, if you really want to meet someone and have like a kind of long-standing connection, that's a good place to kind of like see who's there and try to like meet people and maybe have some fun play.
Sure.
Awesome for that. And also like, it's a lot of people who are like kind of just there for a flyby, whereas I actually feel like the straight queer conferences are a little bit more like, these people are here because they are part of the scene, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
So like that's kind of good about that. But it's also like, you know, there are you know, people who roll through these circuits like, you know, every single time they happen.
Right.
Again, shout out to On Guard Cigar Salon. Those guys are like leather daddies who have been going to these circuit parties for like 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. Right. So they're there. It's just you gotta keep your eyes peeled. And I do like how it's like the play feels a little bit less like people are like, oh, what's everyone else doing? You know, more like I'm actually trying to actively do stuff myself, you know? And that does have its negatives too, because people are a little like more gropey and more like just compilicky and like a little bit more kind of just like staring at you being like, let's fuck. And I'm like, okay. That's not really how I roll as much. But, you know,
and then the straight queer scene, people just stare at you, but like people stare but avoid eye contact. Like I feel like this is what I feel like is different.
Yeah.
One, they're trying to get your attention. The other, they're like, you know, even if you look at them, they're just staring at your tits. You know.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, it's it should be. I would prefer to have a nice balance.
Yes.
And there are balances in some places. People do like good straight queer scene, like, you know, kind of like some, I think like parties and stuff are a good balance.
Yeah.
But
then sometimes you look up from your, you know, thing and you're like, oh.
Yeah, I don't like this. Yeah. So, it's tough. Okay, so we're making good progress on this history. Can we do a little bit more history? Do we have any more thoughts we want to jump into before we do more history?
Nope, we can do more history.
Okay, cool. So where were we? So we were talking about Janus. So let's talk about the coalescing of Janus into kind of like the form that we see it turn into. And then we'll also talk a little bit about this. We've only talked about New York and San Francisco, but actually, as you may have noticed, there, dear listener, there are kink organizations everywhere. So where do those come from? Janus coalesces into more of a straight and queer group and the gay men leave. And why does this happen? This happens largely because more and more men join who make the gay men feel uncomfortable. So the initial, like, subby bottoms who are, like, you know, joining and being nervous and, you know, maybe doing a little bit too much tend to be, have been, you know, not too, like, threatening to, like, the gay men. But if, as far as I understand, there's a good amount of conflict between especially straight male doms who are joining and the gay men, where straight male doms feel uncomfortable about people being gay in their space, especially this is a much more homophobic time too, right? It's just the 80s we're talking about,
and that, like, the straight male doms, for them it, like, falls into kind of patriarchal heterosexual, like, you know, gender roles.
Yeah, and how do you know more than me, like, oh, you've been doing this longer than me, well, I know better, you know, stuff like that, right? So it's apparently a lot of conflict happens there. Yeah, so basically all the gay men leave who are there. They're like, they're not that many to start with, but they're all like, this is stupid. They don't have to deal with that anyway. They already have their own community. So they leave, and then, and, you know, I'm sure there's more to it than that, but that's, you know, not, everyone's not going to tell the full, like, detailed story of the problems. Also, you know, a lot of the initial people who are part of Janus depart. I mean, like we mentioned, Cynthia dies of AIDS. Fun Cynthia noticed she was always trying to be with gay men because that was kind of like her ideal type. And then just unfortunately, most of the time the gay men she was with, because she would, you know, kind of have his play partners, preferred gay men. So they would just be like, she always felt a little bit kicked to the curb. So I felt bad for her about that.
Yeah, especially as a Leo.
I know. Yeah. Patrick Kalika talked a lot about how Cynthia was, like, often very depressed because of this. Cynthia was also apparently very, wonder if she had Scorpio in her chart, because she also was very able to tend to beef with people and then be like, you're out, or whatever, or like, I'm done with you. So for instance, the person who wrote the ethical slut, Dolly whatever, sorry if you're listening to this, I know you're also still around, Dolly, and also you write with someone else whose name I forget, I'm sorry, but great book. But they also, like, she is dating Cynthia, and then they break up, and then Cynthia's like, you're exiled from my life, and Dolly moves to Santa Cruz, and they're done.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, it's like it's not a lot of bad vibes at times,
yes,
right?
Yes. Rough out there, you know?
Rough out there, but that's real life. So, like, all this is, like, fun to historicize, but also it was gritty and dirty and tough in the moment. So, but anyway, they emerge, and they're doing great, and they, you know, it's a society that's more like, to today, is more like kind of what we're used to. So if you meet someone who's a Janus today, you'll be like, oh, wow, this guy's a straight man. This is why, right? This is kind of like, we end up with a society that's a lot like today, but they're still doing great stuff. And from there, I do want to talk a little bit about how we actually end up with BDSM groups around the country, because that's like a whole other story.
Yeah.
But anything else you want to say before I do that?
I did have a thought, but I already lost it, so you should go into yours first. No. It'll, like, come back slowly, maybe.
Okay. So the final person I want to talk about is Nancy Avon Miller, who was the founder of, like, BDSM societies in like, a lot of random places, right? So, like I mentioned, you can go and find, like, mini dungeons in a lot of areas, and most of these actually date back to this person, which is pretty cool. I've read her book. She definitely does not seem like my cup of tea. She really, RIP, she did awesome work, but really we were very different personality-wise, it seems like, from her book, and that's okay. But she was a very energetic person who seemed like she was always into kink and was definitely straight, but very accepting of like, you know, queer stuff. And she went to a Eunsville Society meeting at some point in the 70s, I think in the late 70s, and she, from that, was like, you know what? I'm going to start, you know, kinky societies everywhere. So she basically went initially back to where she was living at that time in New Mexico, and then started, like, kinky society in, like, Albuquerque and Phoenix, like, just, like, four different ones. Then she went back to the DMV, so like DC and Virginia and Maryland, where she was had grown up, and she started Black Rose Society, which is like one of the most influential kink educational societies, and you know is part of the reason we have like the Crucible and the Baltimore Playhouse and stuff. It's like people started there and learned there, and that was just, you know, one of the many things she started. Then she went to Philly and started some of the societies we have up here. So some of the ones we have up here in Philly like are like that. Then went some stuff in New Jersey, did some stuff in like the Midwest, went to Colorado, basically all over the country, you know, just like traveling in Portland, just like all over the place. And
she started biker gang.
Yeah, she didn't. She was just driving. But she seemed like she was would have been a difficult personality for me, but she was very energetic.
Yeah.
And just would
what was
like
the person, I'm curious what parts.
Yeah, so she seemed like very like she didn't have a lot of boundaries on her space and time.
Gotcha.
And was also very like kind of overly friendly and like maybe a little tender.
Okay.
Just seemed like she probably had some like serious trauma she had to work through,
sure.
But just didn't get the chance to.
Sure.
So it was
impressive that she still got so much stuff going though.
It seemed like definitely seemed like manic energy.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So like, you know, that's always tough. But
yep.
that's how it is. Sometimes when
yep.
you start stuff, it's manic energy,
yep.
right?
Yep.
But many of these societies foundered
mm-hmm.
and didn't succeed, but many of them lived,
yeah.
right? And so I think she overall founded like 80 different societies in different places. And those, even if they fell apart, she founded the one in Atlanta that became other stuff. Even if those fell apart, they are generally the predecessors of the ones that we see today all over the country. And so, like, you know, she wasn't the only one. There are other people doing stuff like this, but she was by far, you know, people call her, like, the Johnny Appleseed of kink.
Yeah, yeah, makes
so
sense.
So she
like
really
it.
Helped bring in straight people into the
yeah.
scene, like, outside of the hubs of San Francisco and New York.
Yeah.
Really made it much more, like, easy to find newspaper ads and, like, you know, like, whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, call a number. She had, like, a hotlines and stuff that you could call. And her work was also very much like tying back to this like dominatrix like kind of thing where she did like do like a whole bunch of like herself like dominatrix sex
yes.
work and like also
yes.
like brought a bunch of dominatrixes
oh.
in as leaders of these groups. Yep.
I actually remembered what
yeah.
I was thinking about, which to me
sure.
also feels like a future episode sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think one thing about I mean really both the gay scene and the queer straight scene
mm-hmm.
is the kind of relationship that the shifting relationship that they've had with sex workers.
Yes.
Which also is the shifting relationship that dominatrixes have had with sex work.
Yes.
You know, those who are, like, trying to evade, you know, various laws and, like, categorize themselves not really as sex workers
yes.
versus those who, like, really align themselves
yes.
with it. And I think also speaks to some of the dynamics that we talked about with, like, the struggles of the straight queer scene of, like, you know, with being sex workers, similarly to the, you know, gay men who are so, you know, outside of kind of the norms of society
totally.
That they really have to invest in the community. Like, there is also, that's also why, you know, like, you know, A, sex workers are running these because they are also the people who are practicing it. But B, it's also, like, this is them trying to, like, find the community and the support system that they need, you know.
Nailed it.
But that there is, by way of there being sex workers, especially dominatrixes, a lot of the kind of people who pass through just continue to see them in this kind of, like, monetary exchange
yep.
way.
Yep.
Of, like, okay, cool, I'll take a class with this person or I'll do this thing, but they aren't actually there for the community.
Totally, totally. And I think, too, that, you know, for Nancy, I think a big part of her network that she started organizations with was with femdoms
mm.
who were working as sex workers
mm-hmm.
and it had a big impact on whether who ran the spaces, which is good, you know, they had a lot of women running spaces, but also bad because, you know, women tend to have to run spaces by themselves
right.
and then not get any help with the work. And then also was tough too because, like, for instance, like the first Philly space she founded died because the person who was running it was a sex worker who got arrested for doing sex work. And so she was like, well, okay, got to help bail this person out and get another person to run it, right?
Right.
Because this person couldn't keep doing it. Yeah, it's like, it's a very tight relationship that the history of the straight queer scene has to particularly, like, femme dominatrixes
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
and male subs,
yeah.
which you can very much see today, like,
yes.
carrying over, and is so different from the gay men's community, which just, like, has a relationship to sex work,
mm-hmm.
but is not on this dynamic of the
mm-hmm.
femdom male sub, which
yeah.
is, like, very much, like, what you still see today.
Well,
yeah.
yeah, and I think that there's, like, a way that, like, the community struggles to be a community, because as they should, like, a lot of the femdoms are kind of like, okay, well, one way that you contribute is just through paying me, right?
Yeah.
And there's the people who pay, and that's it. That's,
yeah,
like, their level of,
yeah,
involvement, right?
Yeah.
That they really just see it as a service as opposed to a community.
Totally, totally. And I think that's a great point, actually, is, like, you know, what's the confluence there? So that's pretty much the history, like, up to today, right? And a lot of this is, like, still pretty recent. Like, some of these people are still alive. Nancy Abimiller died in 2011, I think, or something like that, pretty recently. It's still a developing story, I think, is kind of, like, one of the takeaways I have from this.
Yeah, yeah.
And that to me, I was feeling initially very pessimistic about this history. And I mentioned that to you before, but I think that one of the reasons I felt pessimistic is that when I started reading about this, mm-hmm, my, like, wish was that there was this utopian time,
right,
when gay people, straight people were all together and were all treating each other well.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, maybe it was just a couple small group people, but it was happening,
yeah,
right? And I think part of the reason that I hoped for that was that I had read about the catacombs, which are also covered in a previous episode, the Temple of the Butthole, Gilgamesh's essay on that, which actually I think was a very well-run space. I realize now, compared to, like, they said that, but now I kind of see it,
mm-hmm,
in the sense that, yes, it started as a gay men's fisting space, but also they did a great job, like, inviting, like, women along for events. They did a great job, like, allowing people to play together. And a part of having a very open bisexual founder who was very controlling,
mm-hmm,
right, and vetted people carefully,
mm-hmm,
and that maybe is kind of, like, one of the, like, forerunners of the good house parties you see today. This was run out of this guy's house, and it's like, you, good house parties have to be very carefully run and vetted, right,
oh,
to be good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I read about that early, and I was like, oh, maybe more of the scene was like this. And I think the reality is,
mm-hmm,
no.
Yeah.
A lot of scene is not like this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really cool activity for a long time on the gay men's side, and then the straight queer side is, like, always a little bit, I think, like, feels a little constipated to,
mm-hmm,
me to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that also means there's a lot of potential. You know,
it,
like,
is.
we're still so young as a scene. You know, people on the East Coast may not realize that, for instance, like, the Baltimore Playhouse was founded in 2014.
Which is so crazy to me, because it feels like it's such a central institution.
It feels like an institution, right? But it's literally, like, less than 10
years
old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, you have, like, even, you know, the Crucible, which is much longer standing, is still only, like, 25 years old,
yeah,
right? 25, I think. So, maybe 30, whatever. You know, it's, like, some amount of time. Someone knows better, they can correct me. So it's like, we're very much in a nascent baby time period, I think, for the straight queer scene. And I think that, like, people forget that. And I think also when people talk about, like, what's the history, like, on FetLife and stuff, they're like, oh, let's figure out what Marquis de Sade had to
right,
do with
right,
this.
Right, yeah.
It's like, really, our history is so recent and new. And that's okay. You
right.
know, it's like, actually, we're kind of like the forerunners
well,
of this stuff and inventing it versus, like, oh, let's look at, like, what happened in France in the 1840s, you know,
well,
like, stuff
like
that.
Well, this goes back to,
yeah.
I think that, maybe this is wrong. BDSM
yeah.
as a term didn't really, like, sadomasochism as a term has been used kind of since early 20th century.
Yeah.
But even that's so fucking recent,
yeah.
right? But BDSM, I think, really didn't become the acronym of
mm-hmm.
choice until the gay scene.
Yeah.
You know, like, until the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Right, right. And even then it was initially called SM.
Yeah.
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, like, that's kind of what I'm saying is that, like, SM kind of existed for, like, a
yeah.
slightly longer
yeah,
time.
Yeah, BD didn't
like,
get out of it for a
yeah,
while.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
yeah. Totally. It's super, super interesting.
Yeah.
yeah.
Which is exciting.
It is exciting.
And
yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, and, like, you know, there's just so much work that is to be done, right? That can be done. And
yeah.
that, like, yeah, something that feels so, like, given and, again, like, central, i.e. Baltimore Playhouse being so new is, like, kind of exciting from a standpoint of, like, oh, no, people are looking for spaces that can be, like, community hubs, you know, or,
right.
like, rigid spaces.
Right. And, yeah, I totally agree. And it makes me, it's, like, you know, sometimes when you're young, you can feel like, oh, my God, everything is, like, such an institution.
Right.
But, like, so many things are so new.
Yeah.
And, like, it just really means that we have this opportunity to
yeah.
define,
I mean, how
like,
long
what we want
that,
from
like,
the scene.
Existed? Like,
I don't know.
Early 2000s? I don't, you know,
yeah.
even that's, like,
yeah, probably,
surely not that long.
Yeah, probably 2010, 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But,
so
I think we have a lot of time.
We gotta get a better kink app for the queer straights or and everyone else.
Maybe so yeah, so maybe
yeah.
we do need a better app. But even outside of app development, there's so much opportunity
yes.
to make things different, right? Like the initial culture that emerged around kink, right, which is those gay bikers who coalesced
mm-hmm.
into Renslow's Gold Coast and other spaces sporting around the time, the mineshaft and stuff, like they were doing things in such a specific way, and that way is totally different from how we do them now.
Mm-hmm.
and like, I mean, has some common resonance, but very different. And like, we could be doing something completely different 40 years from now, you know? So it's like, we kind of have the opportunity now to like shape some of that, I think, is kind of the point. Yeah.
I do want to say one more thing about the fact that when people talk about like kink fetish SM history, that they like go back to the like abstract theoretical stuff. Which is, I think that there's two very different ways of seeing kink, one of which is like, if you orient your life around like, you know, a transgressive radical sexuality, then you're automatically orienting around like community and people. And then there's also a way that people like really just want to like think about it as like something subjective, internal, whatever, you know, the history of like, ooh, this is like an interesting psychosexual thing, you know? And that takes you down a very different history, and one that is, I don't know, much more oriented around the individual and like your own personal practices. Which was kind of what we were getting at the beginning. But also that I think going back into both sex workers and, you know, relationships to, like, kinky media, I think that there's, like, a really interesting space there of, like, what, again, is something that's, like, shameful private you consume, or, like, shameful something you consume in private, i.e., you know, erotic media, et cetera. Obviously, I don't think it's shameful, but, you know, the way that people relate to it versus, again, like, this very out public... Even goes into the kink at pride stuff, right? Like the like very out public, like community oriented, like sexual practice.
No, that's
that,
very
that's seemingly kind of one of the dichotomies that's informing the other dichotomies that exist. You know.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah. No, I think that's actually a great point. And like people don't think enough about like. What community even means versus like what the individual means and like and how the history can be so different.
Okay, I'm gonna end on a hot take because
what do you let's
maybe
go.
We gotta cut this is unrelated. This is just a rant.
Go ahead, rant.
This is just this goes back to the people who are like very the classic like current tender queer discourse of like, oh, I like people don't read me as queer or like I'm this label, that label, and like but it's like, okay, well, you know, what? How are you living your life? You know, like, why do you want the online people to know that you're queer? You know, like...
Ooh, nice. This is a hot take.
You know, like, yes, sure, you're valid. You know, like, yes, you're valid. And also, like, the desire to be included but not to actually do anything, you know, that is, like, kind of, I think, something that is, like, what I'm critiquing.
I think that's a great point. And I think that, you know, like, even if you think about it from, like, a, like, posterity perspective, like... So many people who were going in and being what I think Patrick Kluivert called leeches or something like that on the scene, right? Not really doing stuff, sucking his energy away. Like, shout out to that. I think that, like, no one knows who they were, but the people who were really kind of in the trenches doing stuff, like, people, you know, those people really made an impact, right? Like, even, you know, Sam Stewart's bitter ass was still alive and kicking for a long time through all this stuff that we were just talking about. You know, and he was hanging out with Jim Kane or whatever, and Jim becoming besties. But even he was just much more involved by like having all the stuff that he was doing than like some people are when they're kind of just like trying to be recognized online.
Yeah.
So it's like I do like a, you know, I try to have compassion for people who are trying to figure their stuff out because we've all been there. But I think at the same time, like if you're not really like kind of like out there actually taking the steps, it's going to be hard to feel the fulfillment you want.
Yeah.
You know, people just saying you're included is empty words, but actually you feel included when you're actually out there and living life like that.
So go live your lives, y'all.
Did we end with like a touch grass take? Oh no.
Oh no. Go get fucked. I don't know. Honestly,
touch someone else take.
Yeah, touch someone else with consent. Honestly, but you say that all the time. You're just like, you know, you go to an academic space and you're like, these people just gotta get fucked.
I have said that.
Yeah, you have said that. So, happy May Day. I hope you get fucked. If you would like to. Don't if you don't. Always say no if you don't want to.
Seconding that awesome message.
All right.
Dap it up. All right. This has been rough.
This has been rough.
All right, talk to you. Bye.